Studio 360.
On this week's show, we are looking at what happens when art gets political.
Tin soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own.
Everybody knows that in the 1960s and 70s, the counterculture generated rock music that had explicit, in-your-face political lyrics and themes. But some brand name political music of that era never charted.
And I'm very happy to be able to talk to you today.
A dozen years ago, a grad student named Ricky Vincent was digging into the archives at Stanford University, researching Huey Newton, the 24-year-old co-founder in 1966 of the Black Panther.
Because we must always realize that the people have the power, and without that knowledge.
While he was combing through Newton's papers, Vincent found a tape. It didn't sound like much.
It was in two chunks, and one of the songs was cut in half. And I couldn't tell if it was the tape that was cut or, you know, if that song could be recovered or not.
But for a musicologist like Vincent, it was gold. He'd come to Stanford chasing down a rumor, and the tape was proof.
I learned about the lumpen from a conversation with Boots Riley, the lead rapper of The Coup, and he told me he heard somewhere that somebody said the Black Panthers had a band.
Nishat Kurwa has the remarkable story of the band called The Lumpin'. Quick heads up, one member of the band uses some rough racial language.
All power to the people! All power to the people! All power to the people!
The Lumpin' got its name from Karl Marx. Marx called society's most excluded people the Lumpin' Proletariat. That's gotta be the least funky name of a band ever. But the Lumpin' weren't really about being funky. They were about revolution, ending the oppression of black people once and for all. They met while bundling Black Panther Party newspapers late at night and singing to pass the time.
How to be free.
It's what black folks do. Michael and Santa Rita and I all knew each other. So while we're working, we're singing.
That's Bill Calhoun.
People would sing along with us and all that, and it was something that lifted people's spirit and made the work easier.
We're closing the door. Won't be no more.
Won't be no more.
There won't be no more.
In the spring of 1970, the party's Minister of Culture, Emery Douglas, asked them to sing at a community rally. It went over well. Douglas convinced the party to take a chance at fronting a Black Panther singing group, complete with dance routines and costumes. Bill Calhoun recruited the band. He had been performing for years, gigging up and down California as Billy King. He had a regular show at a club in San Francisco when the Watts riot broke out, along with smaller uprisings in the Bay Area.
Harold Molotov cocktails, hot shots, and then barrages of gunfire.
The reaction of the club owner when he started talking about them niggers, it hit me that, yes, I am Billy King, and yes, I am the lead vocalist in the show, and yes, I am the MC, but I'm also one of them niggers. And that kind of changed things for me.
So you got to Oakland, and what was that like? There are all of these young people full of this revolutionary spirit, and...
You're a sweet girl.
So naive.
First of all, there was not a whole lot of people around with a lot of revolutionary zeal. During the entire civil rights episode, there probably was never more than 10% of the black population involved in any of it at any given time.
Now, the Panthers in 1970 were the epitome of radical chic. But getting recruits wasn't easy. Being in the party was kind of like college. The hard part, not the sex and drugs part.
In order to be a Panther, you had to, there was a 12-page reading list for non and all these things. So that took all of the fanfare out of it.
This is one of the Lumpin' guys, Clark Bailey.
We enjoyed each other and we did what young men do. You know, but in terms of our direction, we never lost our direction.
There was a lot of socially conscious soul music in that era, like Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. But the stars didn't get involved in radical politics.
I, Richard Bill House Nixon, do solemnly swear.
James Brown even performed at Richard Nixon's inaugural ball. Marxist funk was a whole new ballgame.
Instead of saying dance to the music with power to the people.
That's band member James Mott. They had some original songs, but they would also take hits and just rewrite the lyrics.
Remember, we didn't have a lot of time to rehearse. We had to load up, unload our equipment, set it up, get dressed. I remember Pat Hillier, David Hillier's wife, made our first outfits. We had a jumpsuit and the blue shirts. They were pretty cool.
All right, on the one hand, we were catching on. People wanted to see us. Okay, we didn't have a 45-minute set of original tunes. Yeah, I wasn't able to write fast enough to keep up with the demand.
Sometimes they'd leave a show at midnight and be serving grits to children at 6 a.m. Finally, they went into a recording studio and made their one and only record, Free Bobby. In 1969, the party's co-founder, Bobby Seale, had been sentenced to 4 years in prison for contempt of court.
He's proven his love for his people. That's why Bobby must be set free. We're saying Bobby must be set free.
No, it wasn't the fact that we put out a single and everybody went, "Wow, Bobby must be set free, yes!" No. I served pancakes, I sold papers, I did all kinds of things in the party, but that was our little singular contribution. If you weren't going to come to a rally and listen to a speech, then I'll sing it to you. How's that? Get the message, that's the point. Bobby must be set free. Huey must get out of jail.
In the winter of 1970, the Lumpin' went on tour, traveling to black colleges around the country. They played for a crowd of 15,000 at the Panthers Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. The night before they left home, they played at Merritt College in Oakland. They did their take on Curtis Mayfield's People Get Ready.
On this particular song,
this was the homemade tape Ricky Vincent found in the archives.
Dedicated to Jonathan Jackson, to William Christmas, James McClane.
They have an interlude where they acknowledged all these Panthers that were killed by law enforcement, using the song as an opportunity to kind of respect the people in this struggle.
To all revolutionaries that have given their lives in the cause of freedom throughout the world, we the Lumpin' respectfully dedicate this song.
It was more of a metaphor for the movement, the freedom train, and the Lumpin' flipped it around and said, "People get ready to revolution's coming. You don't need a ticket, you need a loaded gun." Revolutionary artists can initiate radical change. The people that they reached, the people that heard their record, they got a hint of that. But the crises that faced the party were so severe, they didn't have a chance to really bring that whole movement into fruition.
By the time the Lumpin' went on tour, the Black Panther Party had already begun to splinter. Party members were on trial, the FBI was raiding. More and more of the Panthers' time went to providing security. And then it was over.
I met a woman in the party that I had felt very deeply about. She became pregnant. She left. I was very concerned about that.
Bill Calhoun.
I was on security at National Headquarters. Within 10 minutes, the place is filled with FBI agents, and they're prepared to raid. And I was sitting there with my piece of technical equipment in my hand, and I was thinking about my pregnant girlfriend, and suddenly that was the first time in my life this didn't seem quite as important. I woke up one morning and a little voice in my head said, "Get up and leave now." Can you turn that off for just a second?
Of course.
This is awkward stuff for a former Panther to talk about. When I turned the recorder off, he told me more about how uneasy he'd become. The atmosphere of suspicion and distrust inside the party. Emory Douglas touched on it too, vaguely.
What people bring to the table when they come into the organization, whether they're in the rank and file or in a position of influence in the party, of, you know, all those things still play into how people relate to each other. Human nature, yeah, and overcoming those obstacles, and yeah.
Even if they didn't achieve what they'd hoped, Ricky Vincent still finds the Lumpen inspiring. He wrote a book called Party Music about the band. And he thinks it might have gone very differently if they had been able to record an album.
Their work would have been treated as sort of an underground cult act like the Last Poets were.
The Last Poets are kind of like the godfathers of hip-hop.
These people did not get radio airplay, but they sold pretty well, you know, and they sort of helped create a discourse. And so the Lumpen would have done that, but they would have thrown out a signal to the soul music industry that, you know, look, you're on watch here. You can play your bubblegum pop, but there's another level here to what the people are ready for.
Because when the 60s were over, pop music put the revolution behind it.
You know, I never will forget Paul McCartney. I can't believe I'm singing another silly love song. I mean, because things had just, the culture had shifted, and we were back to, let's get it on, you know, instead of something that was important.
From Watts to Brownsville, we find misery.
But there won't be no more.
Won't be no more.
You can hear the Lumpen's anthem Free Bobby at studio360.org. Thanks to producer Nishat Kurwa for that story.
How to be free
from pigs.
Yes.
All on the streets, yeah.
You know that, well.